This is Neon Coltrane with Elise Osborne.
Hello.
Hey. Welcome, Morgan.
Thank you.
Neon Coltrane. And for those listening, I am Elise Osborne. And Mercury and Morgan here talking about the houses in astrology, something that I have no idea. Well, I have a little idea. Don't totally get it.
Well, I can't wait to hear what bubbles up out of our cauldron.
I like where it's going. Okay, so I think I was telling you about this a little bit ago. So when people get interested in astrology, it's firstly their sun sign, right? Mm-hmm. Reading the newspaper or whatever, and just hearing what Sag is up to this month or whatever. And then the more you get into it and you Google your birth chart and you're like, oh, my Saturn's in Scorpio. What the heck does that mean? And then there's the houses, which I think is, as you're learning about astrology, that's one of those spaces that I think is not really what someone is originally focusing on. But you mm-hmm. are saying that it's really important to look at the houses when you're looking at a chart because it tells you where someone's at in their life.
Totally. So the houses are sort of like the orientation point where you can read specific areas of someone's life, because each of the 12 houses relates back to a star sign, but also to all the things that star sign rules. So when you're talking about someone's health, for example, you'll look to the sixth house, which is ruled by Virgo, but in someone's given star chart, their sixth house will be ruled by a different sign, say Taurus. And for someone who has a sixth house ruled by Taurus, when Uranus entered Taurus last spring, or this spring, I should say, they would have had potentially some kind of a big shift in their health, especially if they have another planet in that part of their chart.
Oh, so also just for people who even know less than I about the houses, to me, the houses are maybe the spread you would use in the tarot, like the positions of where the cards go.
That's a good way to look at it. So you'd say like in a spread, one position means the self, one position means the partner, and one position means the future. It's sort of the same thing with the houses in the chart. It's like each house relates to first a different sign and then to a different area of that person's life.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I can understand it, just like I have a little bit of a handle. And mm-hmm. basically the houses are the frame that all the other parts are moving in.
Exactly.
So they're the game board, and then the constellations and the planets are swirling around, and then they end up wherever they are on the board, which is divided like a clock into 12.
Exactly.
And if we're going to start at the beginning, which is the number one, what is the first house about? Like, what does it do?
So the first house is the starting point, and it's like the horizon line. It's like what the sun is illuminating right now. So the first house relates to, foremost, the vision of self. So the first house is about someone's appearance, and how they present themselves to the world and how people see them. So it can kind of determine like someone's hairstyle, the way they dress, something about like the way they like move their body and the way they interact with people. And it rules first impressions. So say someone has a really intense planet like Pluto in their first house, that means that they make a really intense first impression with someone. If they have
what's the vibe on that, like how would that, if we were going to draw a picture of a person with Pluto in the first house, like what's going on there?
Well, you could draw like a picture of like a cartoon villain, and that would be sort of like a really intense archetype of Pluto in the first house. But I also have a lot of friends with Pluto in the first house who have sort of like a scorpionic quality, where like they have this like
also a villain. I'm just gonna
yeah. but they have this like intense ability to like know right away whether they'll really love someone or really hate someone. And they've told me that they have like really similar interactions with other people where it's like you kind of meet someone and maybe this person seems like a really mild-mannered character, but they have like such a strong reaction to you because Pluto is such an intense planet. And when it's in the first house, that's what you see first.
For some reason, maybe just like intuitively, when you said that, Pluto in the first house, I just imagined the guy from the beginning of the movie Hellraiser that's eating a bunch of crickets out of the, his like crazy Rasputin face and
totally
eating bugs. That to me is what I pictured, but that can't be true to everyone.
Yeah.
So basically the first house is let's imagine if it was, again, like just using the word house, would the first house be the front door?
Yeah, the first house is sort of like the front door. It's like the window into someone's personality, their identity, and their approach to life.
Is that the same thing as the rising sign?
It is, yeah.
So I'm Aquarius rising, and I've heard before that Aquarius rising comes off as like a total weirdo. And I believe that's true.
I think that can be true, but they're also like a really awesome friend and like a true lover of people and someone who I would turn to if I had any kind of problem. And I know, just knowing your chart, you also have Jupiter in the first house, and the planet Jupiter is all about celebration and expansion. So I think that kind of lends itself to your character where like when I first see you, I always feel really excited and happy. And
so nice.
and I think that like that feeling of like celebration and positivity is something that like comes with having Jupiter in the first house and Aquarius. It means that you love celebrations.
I really do. And this is a very annoying thing to do after everything you say, but like the mental image I was getting of myself, I didn't particularly like. Not that you were saying bad things, but I just imagined someone with like their hair down and like wearing too many bells and like throwing their hands up and like having a soft mouth, being like, yeah, life. Like, I feel like that's like too annoying for me. But that's probably how I show up. So this is the front door, the mm-hmm. first house. And then if we go through the front door, would it be the second house?
The second house, yeah. As the first house is ruled by Aries, the second house is ruled by Taurus, the second sign of the zodiac.
I'm so proud of being a Taurus. It's weird.
Tauruses are awesome. But the second house is really about like our values, our money, and the things that we own. And when you think about the things you own and the things you possess, you can think about like material things, so like your physical possessions and what's like right around you. And so the second house is about like what you collect, like what you really value, like what you want to have around you that makes you feel comfortable and safe. But spiritually, it can also be kind of like what you own that people can't take away from you. So that is sort of like your talents and like your natural gifts. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense that it would be in Taurus too, because the way that as being a Taurus, of course, we always pay the most attention to our sun sign and have our little like thoughts about it, you know. So as being a sun Taurus, I feel that there's stereotypes I've noticed. Taurus and a lasagna, you know, it's always like memes about how Taurus just want to be eating something. And we're always kind of painted as like these very hedonistic, like sensual people.
Earthy.
We're kind of stupid.
Yeah. You know, you really care about the sensual pleasures of life and like.
Yeah. But I think that things. Also within the manifester, like the one that it comes from a space of understanding a spiritual or inner quality and bringing that into being.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that we manifest in our lives or what we surround ourselves with is such a projection of what's going on within the individual, you know, or the individual at the time.
Totally. And so, and the Taurus in the second house also rules the throat chakra and the voice. And I think that has a lot to do with what you said about manifesting, because you have to speak your desires. You have to like vocalize what you need and want. And that's what Taurus is all about, is like that kind of manifestation.
Yeah, that's so real. And I mean, they're also known for being good singers like Roy Orbison or Cher. And you know, because of that love for the throw, again, lasagna. So the second house is it doesn't matter if you're a Taurus, in the second house, you're just saying that that is the best fit if you're a Taurus in the second house. But
Exactly. So everyone will have some rulership of their second house in their chart. So someone like me, for example, I'm a Gemini. I have Gemini rising. So my second house is ruled by Cancer. So that means that my values have a Cancerian quality. And my moon happens to fall in my second house. So that means that I find emotions and emotional well-being, as well as like my home environment, very important. So that's like what I value.
yeah,
And
that makes sense.
it's like one of my strengths is like working with emotions and understanding them.
That's really beautiful. So, the manifestation of a Cancer in second house would be that they literally turn their house into a home, and they put a lot of love and comfort there, which seems like a good fit for Cancer, actually, to be found in the second house. What would be a bad, awkward fit for what sign and
Depending, I could say potentially like a Pisces second house could be difficult because
you read my mind.
although they can also be extremely lucky because Pisces tend to have sort of like fluctuations in their relationship to like money and material possessions. So putting Pisces in the second house means that the relationship to money is very much this kind of like immaterial, very like Neptunian situation where like money feels like it doesn't necessarily have like any real connection to reality.
Yeah.
Moon, to be honest, moon in the second house can be the same way because the moon tends to go through so many fluctuations. So moon in the second house means that your relationship to money is always that it's coming and going, and that you kind of like spend whatever comes in and it just sort of like flows.
Yeah, I feel like there must be a lot of people with Pisces in the second house, the more you talk about it. I wonder how many artists are like Pisces in the second house. Which definitely is a lifestyle that I'm now like, are you sure I don't have that? But okay. So first house, front door, second house, what the house is, like what you're
Actually,
cooking in there.
you do have a Pisces ruled second house.
I knew it. God. Whatever. Keep going. So third house is I've heard different things about the third house. And one thing that I've heard is it is your home and family, but I don't
No,
know.
so it rules part of your family. That's true. It rules your siblings, and it rules your connection to your siblings and to your neighbors. So sort of like the people who are close to you, like physically, but not necessarily the closest to you emotionally. It also rules the mind and communication of all kinds, as well as like all kinds of like social activity and like text messages, sort of like all of the emails you write, all of that stuff is ruled by this by the third house.
That sounds like
It's like
Mercury.
it is. So it's the Gemini house and it's ruled by Mercury. It's the first Mercury ruled house. So it's sort of like all of those things that you think about when you hear Mercury retrograde. It's like all of those little communications, commute time. The third house rules commutes and travel of short distances. So it's sort of like all of those little tiny things that happen all the time that have that Gemini quality where they're like kind of like little text messages that go back and forth really fast.
I feel like we're also expanding as far as my sophomore understanding of like a stoner philosophy around dimensions. Like, I'll explain. So, like, the first house is very maybe perhaps flat or like one dimensional. You know, it's like this is what you appear to be. And then we go into the tactile, like these are all the things and the things you feel. And then we go into the third, which is the moving and talking and arranging and motion of it.
Exactly.
So,
You read my mind because I was just going to say that all of the houses have a different quality. So the first house is cardinal, and that means that it's like the action driving house. The second house is fixed, which means that it's sort of like everything that can't be moved, that's like very, like you said, tactile. And the third house is mutable, so it's like kind of like in between communicating, connecting everything else. And then when you get to the fourth house, that's another
back to
cardinal house.
cardinal, yeah.
Exactly. So those houses, the first, fourth, seventh, and tenth, have like a really significant meaning. And if you look at someone's chart and they have a lot of planets on those lines, that means that those planets have extra significance.
Okay, this is great. And I hope someone out there listening is taking notes, like, 'cause this will be great for your Book of Shadows or whatever. Like, write that down.
Yeah.
So what is the fourth house?
So the fourth house really relates to your home and your family and like your past and kind of like generationally speaking, like what your family was doing before you were even born. And so it kind of brings up these like really deep foundational feelings, and it has a lot of connection to your mother, to women in general, to femininity, and to like all of these like strong, powerful, feminine parts of life.
Is this
And
Cancer?
this is Cancer, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like very lunar, very Cancer. And also to me, it reminds me of feng shui when we talk about like the past and we talk about our ancestors and creating space to honor all the people that came from us or that we, you know, that are within us basically and like have created the platform from everything that's ever happened to where we are now, which I think
Totally.
is something that we don't usually, I think, in our specific culture or society, we think of a very short-sightedness when we think about our individual ancestors. You know, we don't go too deep there usually.
Yeah, the fourth house is like the root. It's like where everything comes from. So it can have a lot of different meanings depending on what planets are there and what sign rules that house. But if they are very activated and strongly aspected planets, it can be really significant.
That's awesome. So what's a good what is a good like metaphor or like scenario that makes it a little bit easier for someone to understand if they're trying to grasp what the fourth house was in their own chart? So like what if Cancer does well there, let's say what would I'm trying to think of Sagittarius. Okay. But how would Sagittarius in the fourth house, how would that work?
That would be depending on like what else is there, like what other planets are activating it. Sagittarius in the fourth house would mean that you have like a very adventurous nature. You really need to move around a lot. You might need to like travel and explore and not have like one fixed location.
Okay, like someone who's like, where do I live? The world is my home. That kind of
Exactly.
person. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. But yes, cool. That's great. So basically, it's where you feel connected to the land around you and like this really deep, heartfelt connection to the place that you are.
Yes.
That makes sense. Okay. So what is the fifth house?
So the fifth house is the Leo house, and as Leo is ruled by the sun, this like shining orb of light that gives us all life, it's all about like love, passion, creativity, creation, fertility, and sort of like all of these childlike energies that give us joy. It also rules all kinds of like sexuality and romance and love affairs in like a really fun sense. It's really about like creativity. So creativity can be like what you produce as an artist, but creativity can also be like what you produce through your like love with a partner can be children. So the fifth house, if it's aspected in certain ways, or like if you're getting certain transits, could show if you're like about to get pregnant or about to like embark on a serious love affair and all of these different kind of things.
Ooh, interesting. That's a pretty good thing to look at when you're looking at someone's chart. And then when it you is. Say about to, it means that you're talking about the predictive aspects of reading someone's chart and seeing what's going on with mm-hmm. their current stars and what's going on with their chart.
Exactly. So chart. Like when I look at the houses, when I'm giving someone a reading, they're like a very good indicator to say like, this is what might be coming up in your life. If you see like a strong transit in one of the houses, so say like there's a Jupiter Venus conjunction in the fifth house, that definitely symbolizes some kind of love affair.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty cool. I guess I am a little tempted to go more into the spiritual significance of it all being tied and all having a meaning and like a higher, you know, registry of like feelings and vibrations, but not today. All right, sixth house.
So the sixth house is ruled by Virgo. It's all about routine and habits. It's about like the daily little things that you do that have to happen in a certain sequential order, from brushing your teeth to taking a shower to like getting ready for work, going to work, and then all of the files you have to organize and all of those little details that kind of like need to be taken care of but might feel kind of annoying. The sixth house is really about like your like very clear daily routines. It also relates to health and fitness. So if you're having certain transits in the sixth house, it can symbolize like a good time to go on a diet, a good time to adopt a new exercise regime. It can also be like a really strong indicator of like health concerns. So if you're having some kind of like health scare and you need to consult an astrologer or a mystic, ask them to look at the sixth house to see what's going on there. And they can probably give you an idea of like what your body is going through.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, it makes so much sense because this would be like the engine of your life, really. Mm-hmm. And so the engine is constantly doing all these little micro things to make sure that the machine is running properly. And Virgo also in the body rules the guts. Mm-hmm. And the guts are really so much more prominent in what is our health than we think. You know,
so true.
We usually just think of our heart or our brain as being the boss, but our guts are really deciding where the nutrients are, and they have influence over the whole thing. So
true.
If we don't do all the things with our guts that we need to do, diet and exercise, and you know, when we get stressed out, it doesn't go into our it does definitely goes into our brain, but our brain sends cortisol to make us fatter in our guts. Like it's mm-hmm. it's all tied to the guts. So like gut maintenance for health and all that stuff is like the most important to make sure that we keep running in mm-hmm. a manifested way, but also you're saying in a celestial way.
Mm-hmm. It also rules pets, which is kind of fun. So
pets,
like your little
dog. Pets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
what?
So if you have like a strong Venus transit in your sixth house, maybe you're going to adopt a really lovely little Chihuahua.
Oh, cute. I mean, not me, but I mean, like, I think the closest I'll ever get to having a pet, even though I fantasize about having a beautiful big dog, I'll probably end up later in life, like, leaving a can of tuna out for, like, the neighborhood raccoons or cats. I don't care. I mean, like, that I think is the closest I'll have to being an animal taker.
Your sixth house isn't activated. You don't have any planets in the sixth house, so that's probably why you don't care about pets so much.
The thing is, I do care about animals, but I know that because maybe it's unactivated, I'm just like, all the things I can't, like, there we go. So seven is, if we're going cardinal,
so
fixed,
Six was mutable, so the seventh is the second cardinal house, or the third cardinal house. Sorry, so the seventh house is ruled by Libra, so being opposite from the first house, Aries, Libra is about partnership, and the seventh house rules marriage, relationships, and relationships can be like those that you have with your lover, but also with your best friend or your business partner, anyone who you like really connect with one-on-one. So it's about one-on-one interactions as opposed to interactions with a group. And it does relate to friendship, but when we talk about friendship, it's only really one-on-one friendships. And so it's like all of these kind of relationships where you come head to head with another person and have to understand them and have conversations that go back and forth and kind of like uncovering different aspects of personality through relating. It also deals with, on the negative side, all kinds of disputes in the law and your enemies, because it
because
also relates.
Because friends become enemies. I'm just
exactly.
I'm just looking around. I don't know.
That's what happens in the eighth house.
Oh, so okay. Just so I can get more of a grasp on what the seventh house is in progression. It's like the front door, and then all the stuff in there, the things you care about, and then how things are moving around, who's coming through. And then the fourth house is the land that you're feeling. I'm sorry, I'm fucking up already. I know it.
No, that's totally right.
Okay, so it's like the connection you have to the neighborhood. Maybe you've been there for generations. Maybe you were there in a past life. And then we go into I'm already messing up. What was next?
The next one is the fifth, like romance, love, creativity.
Oh yeah, okay. So like, who's coming? Like, who shares the house with you? But no one can share the house with you. That's a weird paradigm. Okay, so who is coming over to the house romantically, expanding, and then how you're taking care of your house, how you're repairing the house, and then we go into the seventh, which is how we are. I'm losing my thought. Oh no. So we go from like maintaining the space to deciding like also who we're again inviting into the space and who we're connecting with in the space.
Exactly.
In the nest.
Who you're relating with.
Okay. To me, it seems like very similar to the fifth house in some ways, but.
The fifth house is really about like creativity, joy, and expression. So the fifth house is about like all of these like kind of like beautiful, bombastic Leo sun.
Oh, like, okay. So it's more like the honeymoon or the introduction or like the fun love.
Exactly.
And then this the actual everyday love later.
Exactly. Yeah. So perfectly. Yeah. So the fifth house is the beginning of a romance. The seventh house is when you put a ring on it. The seventh house is like kind of, it doesn't even have to be the fun side of romance. It really is just like the contract. It's like the discussion, the like figuring out the partnership, all of those things that have to be done when you relate to one person.
Okay.
And on the same plane, it deals with business partnerships, business contracts, contracts legally. So all kinds of legal contracts are ruled by the seventh house. So,
oh, that makes
like,
so much more sense.
I had a friend this year who she's an Aries, and she had like a really big seventh house transit. And we were doing a reading, and I was looking at her chart. I was like, wow, this looks like, I don't know, like, I don't think this really feels like a relationship, because the planets that were transiting her seventh house were malefic. So it was Saturn and Mars going through her seventh house. Saturn and Mars tend to be more negative.
The big boys.
Yeah.
They're
so,
like the grumpy dad and grandpa that are just like, quiet down, like turn lights out. And you're like, God, we were having more fun before you came home.
Exactly. Right? And so like we looked at her chart and it was like, I don't want to scare you, but I think that you might have like some kind of legal drama in your life this year. And that seems pretty weird for like a 28-year-old woman living in New York City. But suddenly, through her job, there was this big lawsuit that named her as one of the defendants. So she ended up being a defendant in a lawsuit and having to like go to court and deal with this legal situation. And it really mirrored this transit in her seventh house.
Wow. We're just puppets of the stars, really. What are they up to?
So true.
So if you were going to get into a marriage or business contract, same thing, with someone, you would probably want to, if you were feeling up to it and wanted to look at their chart or look into your synastry or whatever, you'd probably really want to focus on what's going on in their seventh house, and also probably how you relate with your seventh house also.
Totally. Yeah. So if you're looking at their chart compared to your chart, definitely look at what the transits are between your seventh house and their seventh house, and like how the two seventh houses overlay. So like what's sitting from your chart in their seventh house. So say your sun falls in their seventh house. That's a really strong sign of partnership.
Okay, so if your sun is in someone in your crush's seventh house, they don't know you exist, and you see that when you Google it, go for it. Not ill advice at all. Just do it.
Just do it. That's what I
Mercury
do.
Mercury and Morgan. I hope you don't get sued. All right, let's keep going. So we're going back to fixed in the eighth house.
Mm-hmm. So the eighth house is ruled by Scorpio, and the eighth house is really about everything that happens after the relationship is begun. So after you marry someone, then it's like, what happens after that? It's like sex, intimacy, shared finances, taxes.
Okay.
And then all of these things like financial. So loans, assets, property, all of your resources that you share, as well as all of these really crazy things like mysteries and affairs and death.
Yeah.
So the eighth-
as it is to be married to someone.
Exactly.
So you had a fun time in Leo in the fifth house. Everything was cool. Wow, I could really do this with you. Mm-hmm. And then we go to the seventh house and it's like, all right. I noticed that you're in the sixth house, like managing your stuff. Let's go ahead and like move in together, make this happen. Let's write out a contract for what we're going to do here. And then it's like, now we're doing it. And, yeah, we have to like manage our life insurance and pay taxes together, because now we get a break on the taxes and like we have to fuck however many times. And you're not doing it for me, somebody else will, and then you're gonna find out about it and it's gonna be dramatic.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. We're really building a story around this. I hope this makes it easier for other people to understand the houses, because I am learning more, and also the little story that I just said was just sort of an example of what could go down in your life in the eighth house, but it just shows you how universal it is to be bored with being married. So I just been going off about that for a little bit. So
it's also kind of interesting, especially with the second and the eighth houses in my mind, to look at the two opposing houses. So Taurus and Scorpio are opposite. The second and the eighth houses are opposite. And they both represent different ways of looking at resources. So while the second house is about collecting and hoarding and kind of like accumulating resources, the eighth house is really about getting rid of them and like giving in to this like spiritual need to release your energy and your assets and merge them with another person, or merge them with the universe in terms of like, you know, like dying.
Oh my fucking god. I'm laughing because I like had a Scorpio boyfriend for like 3 years and we lived together, and I'm just like laughing at like our house. Like it was just like me being like, I'm gonna put up this, you know, like I was all about like decorating, and he really could not give a fuck, and he was like
throwing it away,
you know, Scorpio as fuck. So he's just like, I don't like all this shit everywhere, like why do we have so many pillows? Like I was just like, what are you talking about? Like get civilized. Beyond it.
I love that.
So then we still have four houses left. I know. This is crazy. Number nine.
So now we're at Sagittarius. Sagittarius is very adventurous, and the ninth house rules philosophy, higher education, the law in terms of like justice and the courts, and it also rules travel. So the ninth house is interesting. The mutable houses are like in my experience a little bit harder to read when I'm giving someone a reading, because they can mean a lot of different things depending on what else is going on. But the ninth house I always look to for like signifiers of travel. So if you have strong aspects moving through the ninth house, that could signify like a time when you're going to travel. It could also be like going back to school, because the ninth house is really strongly related to higher education. And a lot of times when I've read someone's chart, when they have like a big ninth house transit, it's when they're going back to school.
Okay. You know, this actually, it does make sense to me in a way, because as a tarot reader, sometimes there'll be a major arcana card that has so many different philosophies, you know, behind it. And it's like, this is kind of like a billion fucking things that you don't need to know.
Yeah.
Because when somebody is getting a reading, they don't really need to know the philosophy of the judgment card inverted or anything like that, like through and through. What they really are looking for is signifiers in their own experiences.
Totally.
So I find that like usually if there seems to be a lot of random symptoms of some kind of core, usually what they're doing is like spelling out like an invisible phantom area. And I think that what I'm feeling from the ninth house and what you're saying about travel and education is kind of leaving the nest a little bit. A lot of this other stuff is about circling around, drawing things in, getting rooted, like going outside around, you know, that this seems like it's about getting to a space where you're challenging yourself to expand your mind, expand your, traveling really is just expanding your mind through your body.
Totally.
So that's kind of what I feel there with the ninth house.
Exactly.
Also, something that I'm kind of feeling, and maybe just because I keep going back to this, like, romance metaphor in some of the houses. Do these represent stages of life also?
They do. Yeah. So they from the first to the 12th, they represent all the stages of your life. So, like the first house is like a baby, like newborns. The second house is like kind of like toddler time. And the third house is early childhood. And you kind of go through the whole phases of life, with the 12th house being the ending of life. And so yeah, you're definitely seeing like times in your life when you're like totally like, the fifth house is like your early 20s when you're first finding romance. And then the sixth house is when you're getting into a routine. The seventh house is when you're getting married.
Not for me, but going forward, I also am feeling like the ninth house is, when you first started talking about it, and the reason why I asked is I was imagining, have you heard the term snowbirds? It's like people that get Winnebagos and they go around and just hang out, you know, they're just like enjoying life, expanding, traveling around. That's the vibe I got from that.
I see.
So someone who would be having a suppressed experience in the ninth house, as they're aging, they're not going outside of themselves. They're not taking in new information and learning. They're not growing and traveling. And do you think that that would create a bitter feeling for someone?
It could, but I think that the ninth house is more about like, like when I see it activated, it's more about like opening up, and you're kind of like having a period of adventure and exploring. Yeah.
So if somebody wasn't activated, would they be having like a, like, you know, like an older person that had like a crappy ninth house? Also, what's a crappy chart? You know, like, have you ever looked at a chart and been like, oh, sheesh, like, like, I'd rather not read this.
Sometimes, but rarely, but I think it can be like when someone's chart is really scattered. And I think sometimes people look at their chart and they say like, oh my God, there's nothing happening in my seventh house. Does that mean I'm never getting married? Or does that mean like, I'll never have a best friend? No, that's not the case because, just because you don't have anything in your sixth house doesn't mean you're never going to have a neighborhood cat to take care of. It just means that that part of your chart isn't activated, but it will be at certain times of your life.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm loving this, and I'm just imagining, like, you know, we're experiencing someone's whole life right now in this house that we're inventing.
Totally.
You know, pictures of our minds and like going through. I'm wondering because there's still two.
There's still three
remaining. So what would the cardinal 10 be?
So the 10th house is all about your projection out into the world. It's about the way the public sees you, your career, the kind of structures of your life, your reputation, and it's very related to like masculine energy in the same way that the fourth house is very related to feminine energy. So while the fourth house is about your root and your internal energy, the 10th house is all about like how you project and what the world sees you as. So it's really about like this image that you present to the world, but different from the image that your first house presents. The 10th house is a constructed image. So it's
okay. So it's like you've done all the shit, you've retired already, you're making your rounds, you're doing your thing, and then suddenly it's like, oh wow, this like newspaper wrote an article about this guy's career in science.
Yeah. Or, but I wouldn't I wouldn't go too far into like the stages of life in that sense, because I think you can kind of like dance around in the stages of life amongst the houses. So I wouldn't say that the 10th house feels old necessarily. I think that it feels like this image that you present, it's very Capricorn. Capricorn is the ruler of the 10th house. So it's sort of like this mask that you create that the world sees.
So it's like your online presence, or maybe
your online presence. That's actually the 11th house. But
I keep getting it wrong. Like I want to understand.
So the 10th house is how you want the world to see you. So say if someone has like a sun or a moon in the 10th house, that really signifies someone who understands how they can alter the way the world sees them. And a lot of people who are very famous have a strong 10th house. A lot of politicians, celebrities, and business people are 10th house sons, because the 10th house is really what you need to have success.
Wow. Oof, I gotta look at my 10th house. I'm so curious. That sounds so much funner than I was originally thinking.
I think you have Saturn in the 10th house.
Oh God, what does that mean?
It means that you can be taken seriously.
Well, that sounds absurd, but I'm into it. I don't take myself seriously. I don't do it seriously, but I like it. Sure. So 11th house moving forward is another fixed sign. So maybe this is a little bit easier to understand for me as a Taurus sun.
Yes. So the 11th house is ruled by Aquarius. Aquarius rules all things technological. So if we're talking about online persona, it's all 11th house. Everything that you do online falls in the 11th house. So it's all of those connections that you make on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, like all of those friends that you have that are totally online, those are 11th house friends. And just like I said, the 7th house relates to like super close one-on-one friendships. The 11th house rules all of the groups of friends that you have in your life. So that's like your larger social group and the scene that you interact with.
So are you telling me that like people who are in a BDSM sex dungeon are all like Scorpio in the 11th house?
Probably, like yeah.
Or Virgo, because this is a little joke. Like Virgos are like sex, yeah, but with rules, please. Like, so
totally
bondage. There you go. From the gods, in the 11th house. Cool. So that makes sense. And then it'd be. I think that would be an interesting study to like look at different sorts of groups or collectives or like ladies that, wear like paisley and floral dresses and meet up to like eat cake and talk about Oprah's latest book club book.
Totally.
Wonder what's going on in their 11th house, if there's like connectivity
Yeah, those are,
there.
and those are 11th house groups. So like clubs and organizations, those are all ruled by the 11th house.
Interesting.
And the
So
11th house,
fascinating.
it also rules like our hopes and wishes for the future. So when you have strong transits, or like if you have like a new moon in the 11th house, that's a really good time to make plans for the future and think about like what your desires are, your dreams and wishes, and a time to like manifest them.
That's awesome. I'll have to look that up and when that's happening next. So we've come to the end, 12, the mutable 12, end of the line. Is
Yeah,
this where you go when you die?
it is. So
Whoa.
the 12th house rules, it rules old age, it rules the afterlife, it rules institutions like prisons and mental homes, places where you go when you're crazy. It rules insanity. So when you have transits in the 12th house, sometimes they feel really heavy because they activate karma from your past lives, and they kind of like bring things up that you don't even really understand or know where they're coming from because it's from your deep, dark psyche. So the 12th house can have a lot of different meanings. It's mutable, like you said. And it can be like activated in a lot of different ways. It can be like really positive, and it can bring you like deeper understanding and spiritual growth, but it can also lead to a lot of like depression and kind of like, because you're still here on Earth, it can lead to like a lot of questioning.
Would this also rule dreams?
It does rule dreams. So yeah, it rules everything that blurs between like waking and sleeping and subconscious and conscious life. Just like it's on the cusp of the first house identity and the 12th house, which is like the end of life. It's sort of like this like finite line, and it's a very interesting space.
Yeah, I'm real. I feel like a real fucking pro in that area because I've just had so many literally insane experiences that I've come out of a lot of really intense dreams that I've remembered my whole life. And I feel like if you know how to navigate that zone, you can become pretty strong psychically.
It's true.
In a way, but if you don't understand how to navigate it, you could really become fairly out of your mind.
It's true.
Have you seen the movie Angel Heart?
No. Should I watch
Oh
it?
my God. I watched it last night, so that's why I brought it up. But it reminds me of this house. So yeah, you should watch it. It's a trip. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. It kind of was on autoplay. I watched a different movie and then it just started playing afterward on. Never mind, I'm not going to say the name of any institution right now. But anyway, it came up and I was like, boring, God. But then I don't know, I just let it play. And it got really intense, really trippy. I definitely think that it hits all of the things you're saying about the 12th house, and it's a really good example of the horrifying 12th house, but it really like weaves together past life, consciousness, like afterlife, deities that ride between the line and craziness and understanding and discovery.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it actually was really amazing and I really recommend it. So speaking of recommending, if somebody wanted to learn more about all of this astrology stuff or like contact you, what would you say?
I would say there are actually like so many amazing books about the houses of the zodiac. And I do totally recommend reading them because they are really like, I think, like you said, the first thing that you kind of like get into when you start to study astrology more is like understanding the houses and their relationship to each other. And then you can kind of see what so many things mean. And I think they're really useful to consider. Like I was kind of touching on the idea of like manifestations based on new and full moons. So when you look at the houses, if you see like which houses the new, full, and the eclipses fall in, you'll kind of like know a lot about like what opportunities you have as a witch to bring things into your life.
Be careful what you wish for. I think so about it, big laughing. Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing all this in-depth knowledge about the different houses and making it really easy to understand, because I think it's so important to learn new things all the time. Here I am talking like I'm in the ninth house.
Okay.
Thank you for coming on, and I hope to see you sometime soon.
Same. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to The Uncauldron, and I'm so happy that Morgan came on, and I hope you enjoyed it, and goodbye.
Bye, everyone.